Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Stephen Allison, and I am the coordinator of the Edinburgh Group of SOLAS Centre for Public Christianity. The purpose of SOLAS CPC is to bring the light and the love of the good news of Jesus Christ into the context of 21st century European culture. We do this by promoting various public engagement on a number of fronts. We believe that Christianity is applicable to every area of modern life, and through the development of different focus areas, we seek to demonstrate how public engagement can happen. The Edinburgh Group has been in existence since last year, just at the end, and we held our first public event in June, a debate on the question, is God necessary for morality? It featured Richard Lucas, a member of SOLAS, and Tim Maguire of the Humanist Society of Scotland. And if you're interested, the debate is available to view online on our website. Tonight is my privilege to welcome you all to this public debate on same-sex marriage in Scotland. We're very pleased to be able to introduce our debaters, Patrick Harvey, MSP, co-convener of the Scottish Green Party, Willie Rennie, MSP, leader of the Scottish Liberal Democrats, will be debating against Peter D. Williams, a Catholic writer and apologist, and David Robertson, Minister of St. Peter's Free Church in Dundee and Director of SOLAS CPC. We're very grateful to each of the debaters for agreeing to take part. We also want to thank our debate chair for this evening, who's Mr. James Dixon. He's the academic deputy head at Merkison Castle School. At the end of tonight's debate, I will tell you about some upcoming events that SOLAS has planned for the rest of the year. Before we begin, there's a couple of things I'm required to tell you. In the event of the fire, there are all these emergency exit signs all around from all the levels, so kind of look around and see where they are now. Someone's waving. If you have mobile phones, please turn them off. I mean, someone's waving a mobile phone from the back. And the toilets, if you do need to go, are down those stairs. So you just go straight down those stairs and it'll take you down to the toilets. Later in the debate, there'll be an opportunity to ask questions. If you would like to ask a question, we'd ask you to come to one of the two mics at either side down here. If you are upstairs, that doesn't mean you have to come down. And we'd ask you just to queue up so we can get through as many questions as possible. Please also note that this event is being filmed and will be available on YouTube for anyone who wants to watch later or watch your question. I think that's everything I'm required to say, and so I'm quite happy to pass you over to Mr. James Dixon, and I hope you enjoy the debate.
Good evening. We have a play in three acts this evening. The first part, our four speakers each will go to the lectern and give you an address, roughly 10 minutes or so, putting their position on the motion. Then we will attempt a conversation. Each of the speakers will be able to ask a question of one of the other speakers, and we'll see where we go from there. And then finally, you get your chance to ask some questions. Forgive a teacher's admonition. You'll recall that last week Mr. Clegg got into a little difficulty with an inappropriate, badly chosen word. We will obviously all be very keen to keep our questions appropriately worded. And also, it's sometimes the case, I'm sure not here, but sometimes the case that questioners wish to give perhaps a rather too long explanation of where they're coming from and their own experience and so on. The important thing is that we get a question from you, and then even more importantly, we get an answer from the panel. So do please keep your questions short. But I think if I just run through that, the speakers will be Mr. Rennie, Mr. Williams, Mr. Harvey, and then Mr. Robertson. We might as well kick off straight away with Mr. Rennie.
Thank you very much. When you described it as a play, there's two ways of showing appreciation or non-appreciation in a play, either involving fruit or applause. I hope there's more of the applause than there is the fruit this evening. But if you don't approve, I'm quite happy to take the criticism. I went to Westminster for 4 years. I was a member of Parliament down there. And the one thing it taught me at Westminster is that you get trained to speak for a very long time about very little. Now, this evening, I hope to speak for a short time about a lot. And I hope it will engender some kind of decent debate, because I think it's good that we have this level of participation in an issue that's of such important political significance. So thank you, first of all, for coming this evening, because I think it is important that we debate these issues, and in some detail as well. I just wanted to start off by just reminding people what we're actually talking about here, what the proposal is. It's to permit civil and religious equal marriage, or same-sex marriage, however you prefer to describe it. And it's also to allow religious ceremonies for civil partnerships. That's what the Scottish Government is proposing after its consultation exercise. The UK Government is proposing something slightly different, which is just on civil marriage. They're not proposing to do religious marriage, just civil marriage. And actually, they can already do religious ceremonies for civil partnerships. So that's just to explain the context of where we're coming from here. To me, this is about equality, and that's why I describe it as equal marriage. I don't describe it as same-sex marriage. I describe it as equal marriage for that very reason. And I actually think this was a natural consequence of the decision made 40-odd years ago to legalise homosexuality. We're not discussing here, really, because the debate's been had already, whether homosexuality is legal or not. We had that debate. The debate was conclusive. Homosexuality is now legal. So much of the debate I have heard is about that very issue, about homosexuality itself and not about marriage. So this is a natural consequence of that decision those decades ago. And to me, it's about equality, it's about fairness, it's about respect in society. I've been married for 20 years to my wife, Janet. We actually, next month, we celebrate on the 31st of October. I'm not quite sure why we got married in Halloween, but maybe there's a reason for that. But it's 20 years next month. I value marriage. My family has always valued marriage. I've got two boys. One is 15 and one is 8. Now, I don't know what their sexuality will be, but I know if they decide to be homosexual or whether they decide that they're heterosexual, I'll support whatever they do, because it's really important to me that they do what they wish. They do what they feel is right. And I want a society that respects that opinion, and respects that view. And I, as a father, will be supporting that. I think it's really important in families that we do that. And I think marriage is an institution that we should really celebrate, and we should encourage and support, because it's about long-lasting relationships, people sticking together through thick and thin. And I think that should be available to everybody. I think it should be available to people of the same sex in equal marriage terms, as well as heterosexuals. And because I think marriage is such an important institution that we do that. It's about stability. So I think it's about respect and respecting an institution that has lasted for quite a considerable amount of time. The next bit really is about public support. Now, the people I speak to in the street, they don't get that bothered about this. Most people I speak to, some do, but a lot of people are quite relaxed about it. In the British studies, the British Social Attitude Study that came out, showed that about two-thirds were in favour. Now, I'm not saying they think it's their top priority. I'm not saying that you'll get a march of millions of people out in the street campaigning for this. But people are generally quite relaxed about it. It's the kind of almost a live and let live approach that most people seem to have, two-thirds of people seem to have. And I think, again, that shows that the world is now accepting, is now tolerant, is now understanding, wants an equal society that respects everybody, no matter what their background, no matter where they came from. And I think that's something that we as politicians should reflect upon. Now, I know that some people will say the consultation that the Scottish Government concluded just last month showed that the vast majority were against. But consultations have never been opinion polls. They've never been election campaigns. I mean, if you look at the debate we've got about independence just now, there's both sides will say we've got 2-1 against or 2-1 in favour, whatever it is, you know, because people have responded appropriately to each consultation. But that's not something that would necessarily guide us. If you speak to Professor John Curtis, He's an academic at Strathclyde University, an expert on these issues. He said consultations are really about trying to get the wisdom of the crowd. What more knowledge do you get? What new facts do you get from this trawl for information? That's what the consultation's about. It's not an election campaign. A referendum would be. I know some people are in favour of that. A referendum would be, because that would be a proper election campaign. But a consultation is not. So that's important to respect that. But finally, I think one of the central points with this is about freedom. It's not about compulsion. It's not about compelling anybody to do anything. If a church doesn't want to conduct same-sex marriage or an equal marriage, they don't have to do it. It's up to the church. This is not the state telling the church what they can't do. It's about giving them the power to do it themselves. And I know there's some churches who are saying it's up to the individual ministers or celebrants to decide whether they're going to do it. And I think Patrick and I are both in favour of the law being changed at Westminster in the Equality Act to allow them to be protected. So I think this is really about giving the churches the freedom to conduct their own affairs. It's about actually essentially religious freedom. That's what I support. It's not about compelling anybody to do anything at all. Finally, there's one of my good friends, Donald Gorey, passed away just last month. He was a good Liberal for many, many years, attended church. I think he might have even been an elder of the church as well. And he made this in the kind of typical Donald Gorey style. He said, "I was brought up to believe that the church did its thing and the state did its thing. This is about the division between the state and the church, and they can do whatever they want. And it's not about the state telling the church how they should conduct their affairs. It's actually giving them the freedom to do as they wish. But those who do want to conduct same-sex marriages and equal marriages should be allowed to do so." And on that point, I'll conclude.
Mr. Williams.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters in Christ, or else in our common humanity, thank you very much for having me this evening. It's great to be here, speak in such a lovely setting and in this great city. As you may be able to tell from the fact that I'm wearing a linen suit in Edinburgh in late September, I'm an optimistic person. And as such, I'm hoping that despite the topic of debate this evening being, for many people, understandably a very emotive issue, that we will be able to shed light more than generate heat. The register in which this controversial issue has so often been discussed, I'm hoping will be reversed here, and I hope that people will leave with an awareness that reasonable people can reasonably disagree on this, as with many other issues. And so to that end, let me begin by pointing out, as in fact William Rennie did, by pointing out what this debate is not. This is not, sorry to disappoint you, a debate about sex. This is about marriage. It is about the purpose and it is our of marriage. It is about the nature of marriage. It is our purpose on this side of the house not to judge the relevant moral merits of one particular sexual lifestyle versus another, but to defend the integrity of an institution that has, for thousands of years, been part of the social ecology of our civilization and necessarily constitutive of the common good. So actually, to be specific about this institution, it's marriage, and it is three things. It is a natural institution, it is a social institution, and it is a political institution. I'll begin with the natural. In the evolutionary history of our species, specifically in the behavioral transition of our ancestors from sexual promiscuity to lifelong monogamous sexual relationships, this is what constituted marriage. It was pair bonding, what biological anthropologists would call pair bonding. This led to what they call, rather bluntly, stable breeding, which is to say you made love to and you had children with one person rather than many. The norm before then was you would have the male sleep with many females. These females would then bring up those children themselves, and then their offspring would repeat this reproductive strategy. What then happened in evolutionary history was that we found that it was within our evolutionary interest for the man to stay with a woman, because females often were very vulnerable, and it was in the evolutionary interest of the man to make sure that his offspring stayed alive, and that the best thing to do is to stay with the mother to protect the offspring. That's where pair bonding comes from. And so consequently, we have this assistance of the father, of the conceived child and her mother throughout their life. And this is beneficial to both. Now, this is a biological phenomenon. This is part of the evolution of our species. And it became then a social phenomenon. It became ritualized within our culture. So now when you go to a wedding, you find that people get married not just between themselves. It's not just between one person and another person. It is, in fact, between two people. And that's what the available evidence tells us. In the words of the American anthropologist Leslie White, marriage is the humanization, the institutionalization, the socio-cultural expression of the relatively durable union between the sexes in subhuman primate society. In the transformation of anthropoid society into human society, mating became marriage. And so that's what marriage became. It became a cultural institution, became a social institution. Then later it became a political institution. It was decided that it was within the interests of the state to be involved with this, to affirm that particular form of relationship. I'm going to argue that this debate is really about whether or not we redefine that fundamental political and social and natural institution. What would happen if we do that? I would argue that there are very, very good reasons not to do that. The first reason that we should not do that is because it would leave a very dangerous precedent. If you're going to say, right, marriage is about the affirmation of the loving relationship between two human beings. Well, if it's just about the affirmation of the loving relationship between two human beings, then it can literally be anything. If you're going to redefine marriage to admit one particular sexual minority, in this case, people who are same-sex attracted, then what reason do you have for not then saying, well, why not redefine marriage to include two men and one woman, or three women and one man, or a group marriage? Why not do that? Well, I think we don't want to see that happen, because when we look at polygamous relationships, whether it be in Islamic societies, whether it be in sort of fundamentalist Mormon societies, we actually find that children lose out. One of the reasons why marriage is within the state interest is because it forms the relational context in which children can best be brought up, where they not only have that stability of relationship between their mother and their father, but they have the masculinity of mother, of father rather, and the femininity of mother. So consequently, I think if you're going to argue that we should have redefining marriage, we're going to redefine marriage in one way, then you have to give us a grounding principle as to why we should redefine it one way but not the other. And if you're going to say, well, it's not about children, it's not really about providing the social ideal, the relational ideal, it's really just about affirming two loving people or just loving people in general, well, then you really don't have any grounding principle left to not redefine marriage further than it already is. The other reason why I would argue we don't want to redefine marriage is precisely because marriage is supposed to be that relational ideal. And if what we have had in this last society has been a journey towards an attitude towards children and towards parenting, which I don't think we want to go any further down. We do have same-sex parenting in our culture, but I think what our culture ought to be doing is prescribing that the best context in which children should be brought up is with a mother and a father. We do find, and I'm happy to cite the evidence if you'd like me to, anthropological evidence and sociological evidence, that women and men forming a family and bringing up their children with that masculine and feminine complementarity is the best context in which women can be children can be brought up. The reason for that is because men and women, when they bring up their children, do two distinct things. They bring up their children different ways. They're not just equivalent. They're not just completely equal to one another. They're not just the same. For example, a father has, and this is what this study show, a father will be much more risk-taking. He'll throw the child up in the air. He'll teach them to take risks. A mother is much more nurturing. This is not always the case by any means, but it is generally the case. And marriage exists as a normative institution. It affirms what is normatively, generally the case. And that normative, general situation is the ideal situation in which children can best be brought up. I think the final reason why I'm going to say, because I'm running out of time here, I think we don't want to redefine marriage because there will be consequences to religious freedom. And we have seen this already abroad. For example, in America, there was a case in New Jersey when a Methodist retreat center refused to take part in same-sex ceremonies of any description, and it was fined for doing that. There have been several other examples where churches and other groups, despite Willie Rennie's insistence that we will have, you know, this won't happen here, where church groups and religious groups of other kinds have been fined or have had public contracts withdrawn from them and have been in general discriminated against. Why? Because they don't believe that marriage is between a man, and a woman, and a woman. They believe that it is the natural institution that it is between a man and a woman. That's what has happened abroad. Now, this side of the house can show that that's happened abroad. The other side of the house can't simply say, oh, well, it won't happen here. It's not about what you think is going to happen. It's about what you can you guarantee for us that it won't happen? I would argue that their side can't guarantee that. And given the precedent that's already happened in other countries, this is a real worry. Now, I'm running out of time, ladies and gentlemen, so I'm going to stop there. And in our rebuttal period, I'm hoping to answer some of the arguments of the other side. But I would simply say that this side of the house tonight is not giving you an argument based on, as we've heard, scripture or theology or some kind of prejudice against people who are same-sex attracted. That's a totally irrelevant point. This is not about sex. It's not about the Bible. It's not about anything other than the nature and the purpose of marriage and the purpose and the good that it does for society and the way that it forms that constitutive element of the common good. It's given that we can see that it causes negative effects, deleterious effects to society and to that institution. I would argue that we should reject redefining marriage, leave marriage as it is, and make sure that we can do the best for everyone in all circumstances in giving them the rights they need, the civil rights they need to live their lives as they choose. Thank you very much.
And straight on now to Mr. Harvey.